It's time to catch the beat from Market Street on WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. Your community radio station is in the heart of the action in downtown Champaign, and Catch the Beat brings highlights of local news, arts, culture, and issues to pay attention to. The views and opinions expressed on air are solely those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT Champaign, Prairie Air Incorporated Station Management, the Board of Directors, or the WEFT Associates. I'm your host, Cope Cumston. Tonight, I'm airing the second of three segments of the last and final panel of Summer of Solidarity, held on August 2nd, 2025 at Channing Murray Foundation. The panel is titled A More Perfect Union, Building the World We All Deserve. Panelists are Dr. Evelyn Underwood, representing North End United, Professor Jay Rosenstein, who filmed In Whose Honor, the groundbreaking film about Chief Illiniwek and Native mascots on college campuses, Spencer Wilkin, founder of the UIUC Kingfisher Movement to introduce a new mascot on campus, James Kilgore of First Followers, providing re-entry services to people who've just been released from incarceration, and Claudia Lenhoff, Executive Director of Champaign County Healthcare Consumers. The recording begins with moderator Amy Rickman and her introducing her second question to the panelists. The panel was recorded by Paul Muth. I thank him for sharing his files with me.
We have a second question. We have many harmful myths in this culture. One pushes the neoliberal belief in individual success or failure, saying that the reason why people succeed is because they worked hard or they were good, and the reason people fail was because they didn't work hard enough or are bad. The same myth denies the fact that there are many different components that in fact shape our ability to succeed or fail and that shape our lives. Myths like this advance Manichaean binary understandings about good or evil. They say that good people thrive on character alone and only bad people fail. They say that social justice is only enacted by heroes. They say that young people alone can right the wrongs of the world and that nothing is needed for them to do so besides their effort and their passion. They say there are, the same myth said there are no alternatives. These are all myths. These are all harmful myths that stand in the way of us understanding how rights and justice work. These are all myths that deny the reality of power. So with this question, I turn it to all of you to discuss how we have a culture of misinformation, but we have a chance to learn from one another. So what should locals who want to advance rights and justice know about how rights and justice are advanced?
Following is Spencer Wilkin, the founder of the UIC Kingfisher Movement to introduce the kingfisher as the mascot of the University of Illinois.
So I think I have the easiest conversation up here to prove that these motions, these movements, are not started alone. Though I have to be candid, sometimes they say that never, it's not a failure of one person that would end a movement, but sometimes it can really feel like that. You'll find yourself knowing that whenever people ask you, how is the bird, there's a lot whenever you become the face of a bird. And you feel as though you have to act perfectly every time, every moment, because your movement has become such a big part of you. I think about the bird all the time. I'm making artwork all the time. I'm working out for allies. I'm looking out for people to connect with all the time. I'm also working on an astrophysics PhD.
On the side.
And my boss is very chill, so I'm a big fan of that. Really lucky. He's a big fan of ours. And he understands that sometimes I need to skedaddle over to Quad Day to hand out flyers. Since I was a physics undergrad, there's a figure that comes up every once in a while, and his name is Isaac Newton, and he makes this comment, we just stand on the shoulders of giants, and to acknowledge that in our movement is the core of our success. There are two reasons why we have made it as far as we have. We've made it farther than anyone else, and I can prove it with facts. We've passed 3 votes, no one else has done that. And one is you guys everyone in this room, a big part of you, were doing a fight long before I was born. You paved a beautiful pathway for future students, myself, to walk on. Now, I know you guys can only take it so far. You also have jobs and lives, and you said, all right, here's a map. It's got some ideas. Some of the ideas, here's some things to avoid. That was very helpful, so thank you. And for the last 6 years, the next part was building our team to go adventure into this place where we were told it would be terrible and scary, and we were told we'd have to fight with people when we got there, and we'd fight people the whole way. And I think you guys did a great job of warning us what to expect. I have good news. It wasn't as bad as you predicted. It's actually a lot of fun most of the time. When we go to the football games, we stand outside, and I should know I'm not the one in the costume, so I don't have to complain about the heat. But if you ask my team members, they could. But it is worth it, because everyone there just... I know you might think that this is like badly misinformation, that the community is going to be negative, but they're not. They have welcomed us in the what you might see as the hornet's nest. That is not the case. They are so welcoming. They are so excited. They love getting pictures with us. And I love that whenever admin and athletics see us succeed. They can see how easy it is for us to do this because you guys already did so much work. Around the nation, this work is happening. Conversations of mascots. I thought it was hitting a crescendo a couple years ago. I'm like, yeah, we're gonna go. It's just not stopping, actually. It's just constantly building and becoming part of the normal lexicon. So when people ask me, how is the bird? I can tell them we're doing great because we had a team of students of like 99 people in the Discord that are like 70 of them respond to things, but it's not bad. And they're making art and they're doing it and they're showing up and we are being the mascot. And that is not a one-man show. Even though sometimes I feel a lot of pressure to be the bird. Last 2 weeks ago, one of our other members, the student president, was up here and she could speak so well towards all of her experience because we are not a one-man show. But right now, I want you guys to know this. The students are all right.
The following speaker is Jay Rosenstein, who made the seminal documentary In Whose Honor, about the damage to the indigenous community caused by the U of I's mascot, Chief Illini Wick.
You may not be surprised to learn that I just love this woman and what she's accomplished, because I could have never dreamed of it when I started down this path. And I'm just so proud of what they've accomplished. I just want to pick up very briefly on the thing that Spencer was talking about, which has to do with community and working alone versus getting groups of people together. Amy introduced us by saying this was a panel of skilled, seasoned organizers, and I am not an organizer. I cannot organize to save my life. I'm also not a leader. I wish I could be a leader, but I'm not. It's not who I am. I don't work that well in groups. In fact, I loathe sitting through meetings. But I'm also not a follower. My thing is, I go off and do whatever it is I think I should do and let other people do what they're going to do. Now, what does that have to do with this panel? What it has to do with this panel is that it takes all kinds of people to make a success. What I did when I first learned about the problems with the Illinois mascot, which I learned about it back in 1989, 1990, when I first heard Charlene Teeters speak, and if you've seen my film, you know who Charlene Teeters is. She's a very, very dear friend of mine, and actually, thanks to the film, we're sort of connected for life, and we've acknowledged that, and it's the really the best reward of doing that kind of work. My point being that I knew I couldn't be a leader in this movement, and I knew I couldn't organize people, and all these kind of skills, these things that Spencer has done, I couldn't do that. So I thought, what can I do? What can I contribute? What I think I can do is, I think I can make a video that the people who are organizers and the people who are on the front lines and going around trying to recruit people and talk, I can maybe make a tool that they could take with them to help them explain things to people and do their recruitment and their activism, because I can't do that. And so that's really the only thing that I set out to do when I made In Whose Honor, was to just make a tool that people who are activists could take with them when they give talks, and it would help them to do what they were doing. And that was it. So the second thing I want to talk about is this false idea that social justice is only enacted by heroes. When I decided to make this video, I didn't have any authorization. I didn't have any position of power. Nobody anointed me to do it. I was just a guy who knew how to work a video camera and knew how to edit some video. That's it. And so I simply said, well, I've got these skills. I'll do the best I can and see what may come of it. Now, all along the way, people who I actually liked and respected, when I told them what I was doing, to a person, they said, well, what the hell are you doing that for? Who's going to care about that? And it shook me to the core, because one of the disadvantages of working alone is you don't have any kind of support. And it's easy to get knocked off course. But I just had this innate belief, no, I know there's activists out there who could use this. And so I'm going to keep forging ahead. You know, again, my point being that I'm just another person who just decided to do something on my own, on my own time, with no help. Anybody that says filmmaking is a collaborative issue, you can't do it alone, you can't do it alone. I don't recommend it, but it can't be done. And I did that because I'm not good at working with other people. And Spencer is just such a great example. It, you know, for years, people were like, oh, how do we get a new mascot? Who should we get? You know, how are we going to do this? How? They didn't wait. They just said, let's make a mascot. Nobody gave them permission to do it. They just did it, right? And look where it is now. My two points again. It takes all kinds of people to make change. So figure out who you are and what you can contribute, and just use whatever you have to do that.
The following speaker is Reverend Dr. Evelyn Underwood, representing North End United.
Roy Williams and John Lee Johnson. Roy is still alive. We worked together for many years. Roy had a position with the university. They put him on research because he was so intelligent. However, he and John said they need to go through the formal education, where I decided to go through the formal education. John went to the Senate, the presidents of the University of Illinois and all, to try to make changes for our community. And so did Roy, and so did I. I just wanted to mention that because we stand on their shoulders, the people who are working in the community, as the village keeper now. they really helped a lot and got the people in the community, all races and all that we can get, to try to help with our community. And I just want to mention one thing that I found recently when our Rotary had one of the vice presidents of the university speak to us, that what John worked for is meet with the Senate to try to get the professors to receive credit toward their tenure, you know, for working in the community, because it's a The University of Illinois, people forget, is a land-grant institution. Mm-hmm. Three components. First, of course, academic research. Research is first, I think, and then academic. You know, and the third one is community service. Now they try to say community engagement, but community service. In the past, we've done a lot more, but now they're dissuading the students to even come, not come on the North End. And that's bad, and we need people to change that. And I'm just going to go back to my script. we know that land grabs in this country on BIPOC, meaning Black, Indigenous, People of Color, have been happening since the inception of this country. Started with the Native Americans having their land stolen by the government and given to people under the Racist Homestead Act. You need to read that act. Because what happened is really having an effect right now because of a generation of wealth. We have a blueprint in history to organize all groups of people to come together in an intersectionality and practice fusion politics. This has been a deliberate but organic movement because of capitalism. This has occurred in many communities through the cooperation of big business and government using eminent domain to push people off their property. We must, as a marginalized community, ask everyone to help us in the struggle because it is a moral issue. It's not about left versus right or Republican versus Democrat. It's all about right versus wrong. If we don't stand together now, these powerful institutions led by the government will overtake us. Remember the quote, James Baldwin, we know them. Oh, I've read so much of him. Wrote to Angela Davis, and we know Angela Davis. When I went to Washington, D.C., under the Nixon administration, invited as an elected official, I had a big afro. And they thought I was Angela Davis. And they followed me all around the world. Angela Davis in 1970. Quote, if they come for me in the morning, they will be coming for you in the night.
The following speaker is James Kilgore of First Followers.
I want to just make note of the fact that incarceration impacts families and communities, not just the people that are locked up. And I think it's difficult for people who have not experienced that to realize that, as someone who's experienced incarceration, at times I'm thinking to myself, actually, what I'm going through is easier than what my family's going through. Because they're providing me with housing. They're providing me with food. They're providing me with clothes. They're giving me a yard to go out and exercise on. I got a medical thing that's just down the hall. Now, none of it is great, but it's there, and I'm not paying for it. Or I might be paying a little bit for it, but not as much as my family's going to be paying for it out on the street. So I think, and this is why at First Followers we talk about having people who have been incarcerated, but people who are also impacted by incarceration. That all of us are directly impacted by that. And I think it's important to recognize in Champaign and in Illinois how disproportionate the impact is on black people. In Champaign County, the jail population is anywhere from 50 to 70% black, and the county is 14% black. The state population of Illinois is about 15% black. 57% of the people in the state prison system are black people. So it's easy for most white people in this community to forget that. So I'm just bringing it back onto the agenda because we cannot forget that. And if we're going to build a movement, if we're going to build an organization, we have to build that unity. So people have to be conscious of, also, they have to be conscious of how much experience people who are incarcerated have to share with people. All right? That we need to listen to the voice of experience and respect that voice and put that voice into our policy, into our struggles, into positions of authority and power, because there's wisdom in that experience that you can't get anywhere else. I'm also going to say that not everybody that's been in prison is wise. There's a lot of people that come out of prison being foolish. But the point is that if someone has that experience and they've reflected on that experience, and they've shared that experience with other people that have had that experience, that's wisdom. And that's wisdom that we got to respect. That's the kind of wisdom that we try to build in First Followers amongst our members and amongst the community that we work with.
I'm choosing to answer this question of what should locals who want
to advance people's rights know in the following way. The back of our t-shirts have a quote that says, power concedes nothing without a demand.
Mm.
So the issue is, how do you make that demand? And I would say, first of all, be one in a number. And what I mean by that is be engaged with other people working towards the same thing. I'm talking about collective action. That's where your individual actions count the most and get the biggest bang for your activity. Be respectful when engaged in those struggles. Get educated, but you don't have to be an expert, okay? So don't get paralyzed if you feel the need to know something. Learn what you need to learn, but don't, if you want to be an expert, that's fine. But you don't have to be an expert in order to take action. So for example, with health policy, we work really hard to understand, analyze, and interpret health policy, and that's our job. We do that day in and day out. People can join our effort without being health policy experts. Use your talents. Jay was talking about this earlier. Spencer, other people, use your talents and experience and contribute that to an effort that you care about. And also, leadership comes in many different forms. Jay talked about that he's not a leader, but in fact, he took leadership in his initiative to make that amazing documentary. Some leaders in some efforts are the quiet people who take the notes and do the background work. But they stepped up to that position. That is leadership. Take breaks when you need to, especially right now. This is hard. And this is the importance of collective action, right? If I need to take a weekend off, and I do, but I haven't, but I do need to. If I need to take a weekend off, everything's not going to fall apart because I'm part of a larger effort. It's okay. You have to gather your energies and recharge and come back. The other thing that I would say is experience the joy of working together in collective action, because it is joyful. It is joyful. And even when we lose, because sometimes we do, even when we lose, it's important that we have fought. And the reason that it's important is because we have to document history for those who come next. Look at what's happening right now with the decimation of history of our nation from the Trump administration. They are literally erasing history of anybody who's not a white male Christian nationalist. That is what they are trying to do right now. So we have to document our histories and document our struggles. I want to close this section with a quote from my beloved Molly Ivins, Texas humorist and political commentator who is no longer here, but she was fantastic. So she says, so keep fighting for freedom and justice, beloveds, but don't forget to have fun doing it. Lord, let your laughter ring forth. Be outrageous. Ridicule the fraidy cats. Rejoice in all the oddities that freedom can produce. And when you get through kicking ass and celebrating the sheer joy of a good fight, be sure to tell those who come after how much fun it was.
We have one final question for our panelists. Lastly, as a community, we need to understand solidarity. Solidarity does not mean blindly following people. Mm. It does not mean turning off our critical thinking. Mm. It does not mean following people into war blindly. It does not mean just standing without reflection. Solidarity involves multiple different parties and multiple different components. And so we can never know what solidarity is for somebody else unless we ask. We need to ask and we need to listen. We cannot assume we know what is supportive for somebody else unless we ask them and they tell us. And it may change. We need to continue asking to stand with people in meaningful ways. So with that, at this important point in history, I'll ask all of our panelists, and we'll start with James. In this point in history, what does it mean to stand in solidarity with your movement or with you? What do local people need to understand to provide meaningful support right now?
About 3 weeks after we opened the drop-in center at First Followers, three first-year students from the University of Illinois came into our drop-in
hours, and they sat us down and they said, this is what you should be doing. 1, 2, 3, 4. And we looked at them and we said, thank you. Thank you very much. And for the next 2 years, we didn't deal with anybody coming from the university.
Wow.
Because solidarity does not mean coming into a space that's not yours and telling the people there how they should use that space. So that's one thing it does not represent. We're in a moment now where there's a lot of needs for solidarity. We've gone through a period really where solidarity kind of disappeared. We had uprisings, but the solidarity did not really extend much beyond the uprising, and then things went flat. We didn't build organization out of those uprisings. But now we've seen there's been solidarity with the Palestinian struggle. There's now more solidarity with the struggle for immigrant rights. There has been solidarity in the past for people who are incarcerated, but we need to reach out. We need to reach out to each other. We need to reach out to other organizations, other communities, and build a much broader kinds of front where solidarity is intuitive. It's kind of natural. That's how you do it. Now, since I'm old, I'm going to talk about the good old days. But if we go back to the days of the anti-Vietnam War movement, people in that movement had solidarity with the Vietnamese, but they also had solidarity with Palestinians, with Southern Africans, with Central Americans. There was a global understanding and a global knowledge. And despite the fact that we have the internet, despite the fact that we have access to 10 times as much information as people did there, people don't have that global perspective. It's growing, and certainly the Palestinian struggle and the encampments and so forth have enhanced that, but we need to think about how we build that, because as you have said, Trump is a chump, but he's more than a chump. He's a political force, and people want to talk about him being an idiot. He is not an idiot. He's got a team of fascists around him, and those people are smart. They don't sleep resting on figuring out how to oppress people, how to gain more millions and billions for themselves. So don't take them lightly. Even Trump, he's a tool, but he's not a fool.
That wraps up the second segment of the panel, A More Perfect Union, Building the World We All Deserve. The fifth and final of the conversations offered a summer of solidarity in Champaign, Urbana. And that ends our time for this week's Catch the Beat. I'll air the third segment on September 3rd. All shows, along with the first two panels, will be archived on weft.org under Public Affairs, along with all previous episodes of Catch the Beat. I'm your host, Cope Cumston. I send a shout out and thanks to Palm Youth, inveterate recorder of local events, who recorded this panel. You're listening to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM, streaming on weft.org, a proud supporter of the Summer of Solidarity. With thanks to Creative Commons for intro and outro music by Kevin MacLeod. See you next time.